Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, right then.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio. This is the Q Film Cast, and whether it's online or on one of our affiliate stations, thank you as always for tuning in. I'm Michael, along with James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
There he is. I'm just doing my thing.
Oh, surprised? You didn't have to ask this time.
I was desperate not to say it, and I did. Max to the Max Johnson, Gumbo Johnson, whichever way you want to go, there you are.
Champagne of beers.
That's me.
I had to say something.
Did you say champagne and beards?
Champagne of beers.
Oh.
Both are me.
Miller of the High Life.
Speaking of a champagne-colored beard.
What a great segue.
I love that. That actually works.
I don't know if it's champagne. It's kind of
blonde.
Burbundy. No.
It's a beautiful.
Burbundy.
Beautiful. You're a beautiful creature there. Matt St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Tearing up a little bit.
Yeah. Tears rolling down. Adam, the Bomb Rogers, our producer, he is there along as well to my right.
Hey.
And we get a hey. We get a hey, hey.
Nope.
All right. Everybody's in. So, guys, how you doing?
Doing well.
Wang.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Wing Chung tonight.
Yeah. You ready to live the dream, do it all over?
Ready to.
Yeah.
Been doing that for 42 years, buddy.
42.
I mean 32.
32. 32.
All right, guys, here we are, the Q Film Cast. And in case you don't know or have stumbled on us by chance, we are the Q Film Cast. And this is the show where we meet up every week, like we are right now. We review and discuss a particular film from Netflix Instant. And as always, we take turns queuing up a film. And this week, it's the relentless 2008 crazy drama biography, Bronson, from director Nicholas Winding Refn. This is a James Hard Sub Savage selection.
Yup.
All right, but before we get into that, let's tell you how to keep up with us. Lots of ways to do it, guys. Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, you can find us there, obviously. Hey, we do have our Android app on the Google Store now. Also, our website, qfilmcast.net.
Net,
N-E-T. Go there. You'll find a page.
Had to spell net.
I did. Because I can spell that one.
Yeah, he got Nicholas Winding Refn correct.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah.
It's actually a
V sound. I was
amazed.
See, you're going to find a way for me to screw this up.
You're going
to
find a way for you to screw that up.
Winding. I'm going to call him Winding Refn.
Right.
iTunes as well. Don't forget that. 5-star review. Once again, episode 28, guys. 28. Anything special about that number? I think we had you said 25 was our cleavage.
28
episode.
Shows later.
28 shows later.
Okay.
I love it.
It's a movie tie-in.
Yeah.
I'm kind of scared right now.
A little zombie tie-in.
Yeah.
God, you pulled that out of the hat nicely.
Yeah.
London is empty.
Yeah. So is my glass. Anybody else got some more to do? No. Episode 28, Bronson, 2008, starring Tom Hardy. You've seen this film, obviously, before.
I have.
Probably more than once.
I have.
This wasn't the first time around the bend with you.
Nope.
Anybody else seen this film before?
Me?
We seen it?
I saw it a couple years ago.
I think the three of us had not seen this film. Is that right, producer?
Not seen it.
Right. Okay, so that's it, man. It stars Tom Hardy. I don't want to get anybody else because this is a Tom Hardy vehicle.
It really is. It's his thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this was his introductory film. Is that what you'd say?
No, he'd been around since 2002. He'd done some Shakespearean Elizabethan things.
Oh, that's right. He was in Band of Brothers. He was in Band of Brothers. He was also what the heck, Lisa? Maybe
Layer
watches
Cake.
With
it. Yeah, he was in Layer Cake,
Rock and
Black
Rolo.
Hawk Down.
Oh, what am I thinking of here?
No, he was around, but this is
Wuthering Heights. He was in the Wuthering.
Yeah, Wuthering Heights.
I think this was his first big one man
leading role thing.
This was the first big thing.
This was his vehicle, the first one to kind of pull him out of obscurity, kind of.
Yeah,
Put and then
him
he
over
also
the top.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, he also went on to be in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
That was boring.
Slow burn.
Gee,
not
what
that.
A shock.
Yeah. Listen.
That was bold.
It was a slow burn. Good film, slow burn. He was also in Inception, obviously Warrior. Remember that?
That was awesome.
Yeah. Listen, that's on the Q Film Cast potential, possibly. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
That was a great movie.
Dark Knight Rises and soon Mad Max.
Oh, he's going to be the new Mad Max in two new movies. Max Rockatansky's coming back.
Wow.
Don't even know what that means.
That's his name, Max Rockatansky.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know who Max is?
Was Max's name Mad Max Rockatansky?
Max Rockatansky.
I don't remember. Okay,
his
all
last
right,
name
fine.
Should have been Johnson.
It should have been.
It should have been Max Johnson.
And you know what else? Tom Hardy, born September 15th. Booyah!
No, that's astonishing.
Who else is born September 15th?
Well,
that's awesome. Me.
Apparently and you
me.
And the producer.
Nope.
Me.
All right, well, listen. Let's
I
make,
think that's awesome.
Let's all make right. September 15th
Hardy Day.
Tom Hardy
Nothing
Appreciation
to me day.
Day. All right, so this stars Tom Hardy, his genitalia, which was played by Cate Blanchett, by the way. She's fantastic.
She was awful. I was sick of seeing her the whole movie.
No, she can play anything. All right, guys, let's get into some of the ratings, too. You have your IMDb ratings. We like to get into these. Yeah. What do you think it is? I'll go to Savage here.
High 70s.
You see me like 7.1?
High 70s.
That's 70. IMDb, 7.1. You're thinking of Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't.
You're 10, lady.
Yeah. 7.9.
7.1 on IMDb's. I'll knock it off. Rotten Tomatoes, two scores. The critics score, 77. Users, 74. All right, the synopsis. Before we get into our opinions, the notorious life of UK's most violent prisoner serves as the subject of Nicholas Winding Refn's brutal biop. Born Michael Peterson, but later renamed by his fighting promoter, Charles Bronson's sole ambition in life was to become famous. Surmising that the fastest means of accomplishing this goal with such limited opportunities was to cultivate a stylized persona as a hardened criminal, the ambitious do-batter embraced a desperate existence of extreme savagery, James Savagery.
Savage?
But who is the real man behind the warped persona? Seeing as how 28 of Bronson's 34 years behind bars were spent in solitary confinement, that's a difficult question to ask. The terror of the legend comes to vivid life, however, as director Refn explores the twisted alternate reality created by Bronson and highlights precisely how the controversial criminal staged himself within that anarchistic world. That was a pretty good intro, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's awful pretentious.
You get the point.
I don't know that that's the
there.
Intro.
Yeah.
You get the point.
Get that? Where'd you get that?
I got that from IMDb. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went hard work. But actually, that's there's your story right there. This guy's in prison, and this is his story. I could have just said it that way, right?
Yeah, I think that's applying a little too much to what this
is. Well, yeah. Screw what I said. It sounded good.
Sounds all right. Great.
All right, guys, let's get into it here. But nothing wonky about this film. And there's nothing wonky about this trailer either, so here you go.
My name's Charles Bronson. And all my life I've wanted to be famous. This is the post office I did over. This is what I got away with. And this is what they gave me.
7 years!
Don't worry, son. You'll be out in four. Going on holiday?
No. Something better than that, I'm gonna make a name for myself.
Okay, guys, so there you go. Let's get into this one. Did you know, Max, I'm gonna direct this at you. Did you know that Nicholas Winding Refn was not allowed to meet Charles Bronson in person since he is not from Britain?
It was Charlie Bronson, right?
Charlie Bronson.
But Tom Hardy was.
Okay.
There's a couple times.
And they became friends.
We got a conspiracy here. He stepped up. He stepped up with an answer that gave me a question. I didn't know that.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. You're right. Tom Hardy met with Bronson several times. They became good friends. Okay. Did you know, Hoodie, that Tom Hardy put on 42 pounds to play Charlie Bronson?
I knew he gained some weight.
42 pounds. That's a lot of weight. Muscle
that's
weight.
A bunch of push-ups.
Yeah.
2,500 a day.
2,500 a day.
Push-ups?
That's what they said.
Here, this one's even better.
That's hard.
This one's even better, Savage. The mustache. Yeah. Tom Hardy wears is actually Charlie Bronson's mustache.
I don't believe that.
No, it says that's he shaved crazy. It off. He shaved it off, sent it to him, so he could make a loose hair mustache for Hardy to wear.
How would you do that?
I don't believe that at all.
Well, you get like a little bit of like a double-sided tape and just put the hair on there.
Nah.
How would you? All right, do that. Nah. I want your mustache, Michael.
That would be awesome. I want your mustache, too.
I promise you. And I might even try this. I'll give you guys hair.
Nope.
You take it to
nope.
A... you can take it to like a special nope. Effects guy. The guy, Donnie Baker from Star Wars. I don't know. He can make a fake mustache out of this hair, I'm sure.
Well, in all fairness, I mean, if there was only that hair on Charles Bronson. Or yeah. Charlie Bronson. And that was fairly clear through the movie. The only hair he had was his mustache.
Yeah, we're looking at Tom Hardy, though.
Well, I guess that this was a way to pay homage to the guy. He wanted to be in the film, and the best way for him to be in the film was to, here's my mustache. Anyways, there you go.
Is that the best way?
I don't know.
Probably the only way.
I just hope that it was hair from his face.
Wouldn't that be the ultimate joke?
It would be.
Yeah. Jason, yeah, that's my mustache.
You know, apparently Jason Statham was circled to play this thing. This was actually going to be his vehicle. This is the one that they wanted. Scheduling conflicts, couldn't do it. So then you get Tom Hardy. Currency, because as you know, or maybe you don't know, we don't do 1 to 10 because that's an easy way out. We let the film tell us what to rate with. 1 to 10. What, Savage? What are we going with?
We're going with Years in Solitary.
Love it.
Is that what we're going with? Okay, that's what we decided on.
Years in Solitary. Oh, so it's not a thing. It's more of like a state of mind.
Yeah. Does that mean we can go up to a 24 on this movie?
Or 30.
Something like that?
He's actually thinking about
it. No, this is a 10-year sentence.
Yeah. Okay.
How many of these? Right. Everybody gets a 10-year sentence right. with this film, and we're going to talk about how many of those years are in solitary confinement.
Okay.
Let's go. Let's do this thing, man. And ratings, 1 to 10 solitary confinements. And I'm going to go straight to James Hartsub Savage, man. This is your baby. What you going to give Bronson 2008?
I hate to do it to you, Charlie, but you get 8 years of solitary confinement.
Dang. How much for good behavior?
None. 8 years.
Eight.
Eight solid years.
I knew
solitary.
That, I knew it would be somewhere between 8 and 10. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Second I guess time. Technically he gets two for good behavior.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
All right. Fair enough.
We can look at I don't want to reverse engineer this thing.
Right.
Okay.
Hoodie.
Years solitary.
Hoodie, talk to me about 2008 Bronson. Solitary confinement years. How many are you going to give him?
I'm going to cut it in half and go with four.
You're going four on this thing.
I'm going to four.
He's cooling us off, guys. He's
Charlie
cooling
loves
us
him.
Off.
Charlie loves him.
Four for yeah. good behavior?
And you know what that is? That's a crime. That's a crime to be punished. No, I'm just joking.
All right.
I may or may not agree with you. I don't know.
You don't know?
There's still time to sell me as we make it around the table. Max, what you going to go with on Bronson here?
He gets 7 years from me.
He's going to get seven?
Yep.
What you going with there, Adam?
I'm sticking with Matt, four.
Nice.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, jeez, boy. Geez. You know, teeter-totter.
Wow.
Wow, that's surprising. Wait, did he just say that?
Yeah.
This had all kinds of crazy stuff and blood and
stuff all over the place.
Yeah, it had like, you know, stuff that I thought would be in Adam's wheelhouse.
Right. I thought so, too.
Yeah.
But I got my backup.
All right.
He's got his backup. All right.
Uh-oh.
What does that mean?
That means he's got he's got you in his corner.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's on me, guys. Well, you know,
welcome
I'm,
to Rosencrantz.
Yeah. You know what? I'm kind of in between. I'm in between seven and eight. I'll go ahead and go with eight. I'll go ahead and all go right. with eight on this. Soft eight. I might even it could go to seven. I'm going to stick with eight. Give it a little push the other direction right. here. That's what we go with. Max, 31. 31?
31 years in solitary.
31 years in solitary
we couldn't even
confinement.
Get to 34?
That's 10 years longer than I've been alive.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. All right, let's get into this one then. Discussion. Let's talk about how and why we got to these ratings. So let's go back where we started from. That's James Hartsub Savage. You gave this 8 years in solitary confinement.
First and foremost, I'd say Tom Hardy's performance in this is a tour de force. Visually, it's beautiful. I mean, and it's kind of a throwback to trying to do a 70s, 80s. I think Refn captured the graininess of it.
Yeah.
There's the dichotomy of an innocence and the vulgarity of Bronson that I think comes through. You don't know whether to be sympathetic with him or appalled by him.
Yeah.
So that dichotomy really interested me a lot.
Yeah.
Refn's my new favorite director. And I chose this one because I thought it seems to be of his main four, the most traditional one.
Yeah.
That's why I chose it for us to discuss.
Right.
The other ones are a little
they're a little different.
They're a little different. I mean, the visuals are cleaner. I like the graininess of this a lot. He really captured the period. I think
the period being what? What do you see?
The 70s and the early 80s.
Okay.
I mean, there's the same thing that we did with This Is England.
Right.
I think he captured it in that same way.
Just the way people carried themselves in general.
Yeah, but yeah. Also visually. I mean, if you're old enough to remember what film or television looked like at that time, I think this captured that image that what it looked like at that time. So it can take you back to that time.
But, that's interesting. I didn't see this as a big period piece, but yeah, I'll go with you on that. Yeah,
no, it is a period piece, and whether or not it's 100% accurate, it's like a biopic I think that's there's some question on that. But Tom Hardy, I mean, I think it's, I mean, there are powerhouse performances, and I think this is one of them, and I really enjoyed it on that level.
Yeah. So Tom Hardy was the glue to this whole thing. He's the one that pulled it together. And you think that is a testament to him or more of Refn?
It's both. No, I think it's probably more Tom Hardy.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, obviously an actor gives what his director wants, and sometimes a good actor can give what they have. I think Refn does visual stuff very well. He's a master framer. And this movie is so framed in so many ways. You can take a lot of the scene for scene and just look at the framing of it.
Yeah.
It's really astounding how he frames.
Yeah.
And this one's a little looser than some of his other stuff. If you look at like Drive, Valhalla Rises, or Only God Forgives, those things are masterfully framed and like almost like surgically framed. This one's a little looser. And I think it's the subject matter of Bronson being the criminal and just the psychopath, but kind of a lovable scamp thing.
Right. I'm completely with you there.
It really sold me on it. I mean, I really liked the character as portrayed from Charlie Bronson.
Yeah, there was a specific way to deliver what you're saying, that in between, which way do I go with it?
Yeah.
And I think Hardy was good there for sure, especially in that regard.
Yeah.
Hoodie, look at that, man. This is going to be good because we're going from an 8 to a 4. Right, cut this guy in half, man. Why'd you go 4 on Bronson?
Cut me, Hoodie. Cut me.
No.
Knock him down size at the knees. I have no idea what that even means or why I said that. It sounded cool. I sounded mean when I said it, so I liked
it. No, I don't want to be mean about anything. No.
It's just a movie.
Okay, and it's not. I just couldn't get into this one at all. And you're talking about how good the director. First off, I didn't know that this was the director that did Drive and Valhalla. I didn't even right over my head with that one. Completely missed that boat. Go figure.
Yeah.
Love Drive. Couldn't get into Only God Forgives. Only watched it halfway through. Turned it off. This movie, same difference with that. I felt like if you compare it to Drive, Drive is a very realized movie.
Yeah.
You know exactly what he's going for, and he really achieves it. It's one of my all-time favorites. Love that movie. This movie, we talked in another episode, you could take it, you know, the first half and the second half. And the first half, it looked like he just had no idea what he wanted to do. And he was trying to be, avant-garde a little bit with some of the things he was doing, like the little cuts of the clown scene. Look at the clown scene. I get what it is, but it just didn't sell me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that, you're saying Hardy was the glue that held this together. I thought that it was completely overacted. And the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, well, James would love this because because he's a theater guy. And this thing is so, I could see this play out on the stage way better than on film.
Because it literally was on a stage.
Well, I didn't know that either.
Well, so, I mean, he was
not just that part. Right. I'm talking about the whole thing. But as a movie as a whole, it just didn't stick together. It didn't know what it wanted to be, and it wasn't completely realized. And
it tried to be a lot of different things, actually. Well, it tried.
Right. Yeah. And towards the end of the movie, I felt like it stopped with the little cutesy things like you remember
Forest
this
Park.
The scene at the beginning where he's like it's like a yellow scene and he's just got his face and he's laughing looking at the camera and it's like what do you need that scene for?
I think it was sort of an establishing scene.
I know what that scene's for.
But I mean and the little scenes like that happened all through the first half of the movie and they kept like just throwing me right out of the story.
Yeah.
And if the story's good enough and this one seems like it is, then just tell me the story. That's all you have to do. I don't need to have a cut scene to Hardy staring at the camera telling me what's happening. Just show me, you know, show me the story. It seemed like a really good one, and I hate that it was ruined by this actor and this director.
Well, you know, Refn's incredibly ambitious. He's ridiculously ambitious.
And
you
I
think
said,
that
and
it
I
was
love,
like over
love
overkill.
Drive, but I just don't think that this was a fully realized movie, and it was just too much. It was just so all over the place.
I completely understand how you can get there. I do. I really completely understand that. He's a hard digest sometimes. I mean, he's hard to get down. You know, Refn. He puts a lot at you. A lot of weird stuff at you.
That's not even the case. I can take a lot of weird stuff coming at me, but just make it, you know, make sense. Yeah, just give me build bridges from one weird thing to another, and I'll stay with you as long as you're there. But it just seemed like he was just doing stuff to be, let's do this here. And
he's trying to throw his arms.
Weird
he's
and,
trying to throw his arms around.
Yeah,
too much,
look how creative I am. I'm doing this now. Okay. Let's cut scene to him on a stage talking with his face painted, and it was just like okay,
or half his face painted.
either or. It was the same difference. Yeah. But in any case, it was taking me completely out of the story.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And I just can't forgive it for it.
I can't disregard anybody's opinion if that's what they took from that. I mean, that's
and
that's
if only God forgives, I do not.
Well, listen, I'll forgive you. I'll forgive you this one time. Go thou and sin no more. Max the Max Johnson, you gave this, I believe, a 7. Right?
I did give it a 7. I gave it a 7. Yeah. A little lower than him, a little higher than him.
Okay, what you going with? Why?
Gave this movie what I did because of Hardy. He was great in it.
Yeah.
He was really great in it. I don't think it was overacted. I think it was acted in a stylized version that did make it come across almost as a stage play, even when it wasn't on stage.
Yeah.
But I don't think a lot of the parts that were actually, quote-unquote, during the film, you know, mm-hmm. the narrative of the film,
right?
They seemed a little bit overacted, I think, in some parts. But I think knowing, and this is sort of a cheat, knowing what you know about Hardy meeting Bronson, and from everything I've read about this guy, that's pretty much what this guy's like. It seems he's pretty much like this. He's pretty boisterous. Now, and the reason I say it's cheating is because you shouldn't have to know that.
Right.
What's going on in the movie.
You shouldn't have to have a cutscene that has Hardy tell you what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that aspect. But even if I didn't know that, I did know that the first time I watched the movie a few years ago, I still enjoyed his performance. He's almost in every frame of this thing.
Almost, yeah.
I think he is, actually.
He may be.
Not every frame, but almost. But he really holds the thing together. He carries this entire movie, and despite what you say is overacted, I thought he was great in it. I could not take my eyes off the guy.
Just because he was in every scene.
Yeah, but still, I was entertained by him the whole time. I was engaged, and I wanted to see what he was going to do.
Right.
The reason I didn't go higher was part of what Matt said, where they have this sort of the Shakespearean chorus thing where he's on stage telling us what's going on.
You didn't like that?
I enjoyed it. I liked it, yes, but it was fun to watch. It was well done, and I can see where it was a little bit of to cut some narrative out and cut some exposition out just to kind of get to the chase on some of the stuff.
Yeah.
But in the long run, the movie was only an hour and 29 minutes long. You had plenty more movie you could have stuck in there.
Yeah, it was quick.
To show us some of this.
It was quick,
And they actually left a lot of stuff out about this guy that they could have put in there.
Yeah, but that pace, the way it moved along fast, it was a fast pace. It just, come on, let's go. And they used that to its advantage. I think that kind of worked for me.
There were a couple spots I thought it slowed down a little bit. I think they could have sped it up a little bit.
You think so?
Or they could have, not necessarily sped it up, but they could have added a little bit more of the story to this
thing. A little bit of depth to the main character maybe would have been nice.
Yeah, I thought a little bit more of that would have, because like that part when he was on stage and he's standing there and they show the guy, the film behind him, and there's the guy sitting on the roof.
Yeah. That's him.
That's him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's real footage.
And that's like he holds the world record for most rooftop hostage takings or something like that. Well, show one of them.
You see, I didn't think the guy's story was all that interesting. I mean, there's nothing really here like, wow, what a story.
He's an interesting guy.
But the story to me is like, you know, it's really not that incredible.
He's a hood.
Story. It's probably pretty common.
That's because you're not exploring like both sides of it. He's got to have some regret. At some point in his life, this guy has got to been like, maybe this wasn't the right direction for me to take.
Yeah.
Beating everybody in front of me maybe is not the best idea.
You know, when you say the character needed more depth, I pulled a few things that maybe I just, for whatever reason, I pulled them out.
You shouldn't have to, like, pull depth out of your main character. That should be very
apparent. Well, they're not apparent, but they're giving me, like, here, come this way just a little bit, and I was able to grab a little teeny threads that made this character a little deeper for me than I thought he probably could have been.
Yeah,
I grabbed
out
a few different things there.
Yeah, caricature.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
That was a very Freudian. Yeah,
my apologies. But I want to get into that in a minute, because I pulled a few things that maybe you guys did not notice from just little things, little nuances that was on film. I'm sorry, on screen with this guy that made his character a little richer to me. But let's go over to Adam first. Adam,
you're leaving us.
Come on, Bob.
We'll get into that.
Come on,
Bob.
He gave
this a 4. Forget by that point.
You guys are together on the island of 4 together. So
4.
Tell us why you. I thought you were a little higher on this. It's surprising, but why'd you give this a 4, Adam?
Okay, well, I'm not the biggest drama person. You know, I don't like a lot of drama movies.
What a
but
shock!
Going into this, that's why I went to watch it as, and there to me, there seemed like there was no character development. Nothing. There was no backstory to anything of what they really did in this entire movie. And then once you got past the part, you know, the insane asylum part,
yeah,
everything was nothing but it was a copy and paste of each scene from then on. I'm going to get naked. I'm going to kidnap somebody, get naked, and fight. Kidnap somebody, get naked, and fight. And it was constant. It was just copy-paste.
I would like
and
to...
And it was not... It wasn't anything special. It just lost it for me. I really got bored after
that's all you're seeing. I think that's all you're seeing, copy and paste, get Maestro, naked, and fight.
Maestro, may I interject here?
Yeah.
We've just heard Adam complain that there was... no character development and no
which
backstory.
Which is the best argument he's ever made, by the way.
Right. And no backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't want to let that pass. I don't want to let that pass. We've just heard Adam say there was no character development.
That's crazy.
No backstory.
Adam is growing as a reviewer. Adam is growing as a watcher.
Our little boy.
He's all grown up.
Look at him. Little boy's leaving the nest. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's it.
And all right. Stop talking for the rest of the show because you're on a high.
Yeah, leave it there. Just say,
I will miss you.
Thank you. Good night.
Just say there wasn't enough character development for me and blow my
not
mind.
Not enough character development and too much Wang.
Wait, whoa, that was absolute.
Yeah. All right, let me round this thing out. Let me tell you why I gave it an 8, between a 7 and an 8. I'll tell you at the end which way I'm going to go, okay?
Let's keep this under 15
minutes.
You already
said an 8, I think.
I've got this. Right. All right. Here's what I got from this one, okay? The way I look at this is like an experiment in style over substance, all right? And to me, Refn does that, but I think that is his substance.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
He doesn't apologize for that. Here's what I got from this one, okay? To me, Refn is probably the most instinctual filmmaker I've seen in a long time. He's just instinctual, right? I mean, he unapologetically slaps whatever he wants to on the screen. I don't think this is any exception, especially this film. I thought it was rompous. It was wildly ambitious. It was in your face. I also thought it was charming. Kind of go figure on that one. I thought the film was charming, especially the character.
I did too.
In the end, it wasn't just about a degenerate in prison. I mean, there were layers there with basically saying nothing about that. It didn't address that. But, you know, from the very beginning, this thing was like a birthing scene. Did you guys catch up on that? In the very, very scene, the guy's washed in red light. The walls are red. He's coming down the prison corridor. The way the camera's set up, it looks like two open legs. Did you see that?
No, he's Refn frames brilliantly. I mean,
yeah.
He's a master framer.
When you see that and you say, well, there's no character development, I'm seeing that as this guy's about to be born. He's naked. He's sweaty. There's people pulling him out of this prison cell. Like he's being removed from the uterus. And to me, that's not just, well, look at this guy being pulled out of the cell. I'm like, okay, this guy to me has just been born into
this life.
And immediately, I think two or three scenes later, he even addresses that. I was born in prison. Mm-hmm. My second life came about in prison. I needed a new name.
Yeah.
So when I say that there's style and substance and that the lack of substance with style becomes that, that's what I see there. I mean, every one of these things just kind of painted the picture of this guy and his story through basically no narrative or no dialogue at all. But I understood what the character was, a guy who's being born again as something else. And it's even framed like that. Did you catch it? The walls look like two legs?
Yeah. Well, right? I mean, now that you're saying it, I do understand what you're saying. It's and naked screaming into this world. It's
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I like this film because it worked. I mean, for me, it just worked. Everything about it, you know, it danced on the edge. It made me cringe, made me want more, made me sympathetic to the characters. And to me, there really wasn't a bad guy in this film.
Sympathetic?
To it made who? Me sympathetic. Well, especially to Bronson.
To Bronson?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. Not you?
I wish I had some backstory to see what I was sympathetic
to. No. What's the feel?
Touché.
All right. Well, I can only speak for me. What I'm saying is sympathetic. Here's a guy who wanted to be part of some society. He didn't want to be an outcast. He wanted to belong. Even at the end, when he's doing these things to these people and you're saying, well, he's abusing these guys. He's naked. He's tying them up. He never wanted to hurt him. Remember, he's got to rub lotion on him and all. He never wanted to hurt anybody. He just wanted to belong.
Attention.
That's so asinine.
And
he's literally beating the crap out of everybody in front of him. You're saying he doesn't want to hurt them. Explain that to me.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Savage? This was not a guy with a dark heart.
I agree.
He did not know what his place was. He had issues. I think he was a narcissist. He was a megalomaniac.
I agree.
But for example, the one time when he has the guard in the cell, Yeah. And he's getting naked. He's saying, rub the lotion on me so we could, you know, fight. Yeah. And he's telling
war paint.
He's telling the guys, I'm going to kill this guy. And he looks over at the guy sympathetically going, you know, I'm not going to hurt you.
Yeah, you're good.
You're good. He did that several times throughout the film, especially with the female relationship.
Right.
He didn't want to hurt her. He wanted to love her. He didn't want to hurt these people. He wanted to belong somewhere. So to me, the whole thing's built on a sympathetic view of this guy.
I wish it had built up that side of his personality rather than just fighting all the time and getting naked.
Well, I didn't see that. All the scenes I'm talking about are not about a guy just fighting for no reason.
All right. So let's just look at this movie let's put it on mute and watch it. And what do you see? 65% of the time it's a big naked brawl.
Well,
I
think if you were to do that experiment, I think what you would see, which is the truth of Charlie Bronson, is that he was or is a very primitive, savage kind of person. That physical engagement of the conflict is what drives him. There's no thought beyond that. There's not, why do I do this? I'm not. Yeah. It's not malicious.
That's exactly right.
There's no intent. It's the engagement. It's the bite. It's the attack. That's what drives him as a thing, as a mammal. You know, and whether you call that a wolf or a panther or a lion, he's that. Whatever drives those animals drives Charlie Bronson, and that's what he does. He attacks with no thought. No, that doesn't make him evil. It doesn't make him bad. It doesn't make him malicious. I think it just makes his nature is to be that.
No, it's not. Because I disagree. I read up on Charlie Bronson after I watched the movie, and looks like he went to he was Islamic for a little bit. He married, got a second wife, turned to Islam. So it looks like he is actually searching for himself, which is interesting. He gave that up. Now he does paintings. He writes poetry. He publishes books. Yeah. So there's a lot of avenues for, you know, self-expression. And
well, other 30 than years in solitary will give you time to think.
Yeah, but you know, that's...
will make you crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But see, I thought this guy had some kind of an emotional problem. But my sympathy...
Well, that's so obvious. But
my sympathy comes from that. My sympathy comes from the fact that this was a guy who obviously was flawed, looking for a way to fit in.
Who isn't?
Well, that's why it becomes an interesting story to me. Right. Not everybody's in prison trying to find that. Some people are bumbling through life trying to find it. This guy's circumstance was a little different than the average person, but I think I can relate to that. Where do I fit in? That's why it's not just a prisoner story.
But you're talking about two different things. You're talking about sympathy and empathy. I had sympathy for E.T. I don't have empathy because I've never been in his place, but I have sympathy for him. Do you have empathy for this guy? Do you feel like you've been in this guy's place before and feel like you know where he is?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think a little bit of empathy. Yeah, I think anybody can
be misunderstood.
What pulled this character into a different level for me was the fact that, did you ever see him really hurt anybody? I saw him go out of his way not to hurt people.
Other than the dude that he strangled.
He deserved it, though.
Okay, yeah, that's the pedophile, right? They even put that in there, so he almost felt like he could have some sympathy. Very conveniently so. But when he's sitting there in the mental institution, this is a guy who just wanted to be glorious. Who doesn't want to be that? And he's drooling in a chair. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this character and feel bad for him.
I know you want to talk, but I don't want to cut anybody off. I'm somebody that liked the movie.
Yeah,
I liked the movie. I enjoyed it, but I didn't have any sympathy for this guy at all.
Okay,
none at all.
Not at all.
The guy's apparently whacked out of his head. The guy's got problems.
Certainly. Yeah. No, he enjoys this. He wants to be what he's doing.
But does that make me want to go like, oh, poor guy?
Well, I didn't want to let him out of jail. That's what you're asking.
Get out of jail. And when he did get out of jail, boom, 50-something days later, he was right back in.
Because he wanted back in there. He wanted to go back there.
I don't think he did.
He was like institutionalized, you know. He didn't want to
be in the movie. He was in love with a girl.
Stole the ring.
Why?
69 days.
So why would he want to go back into prison?
Yeah. I think because it goes back to the premise that's where he was born. In the very beginning frame, he's born there. He's a product of this.
That's an excuse.
No.
He was Michael before there, and he became Charlie in prison. And I thought he wanted to be Charlie.
He became Charlie out of prison.
Thank you, Max.
Well, you know, his demeanor and who he was, who he identified with, was born in prison.
How he defined himself was the brawler that would just beat your...
That's how he got respect. That's how he became important. That's how he became loved.
No, and he didn't become loved by that because I mean,
that's where he changed.
The scene where he got paid, he said 20 quid. That's it. I give you magic in there. He said, oh, you know, spare me the Oliver Twist routine. Yeah, you got to put on. He said, "Well, I'll
you
put
just
on a show
on
a
gypsy."
He said, "You know, well, you got to build your reputation," and he blew his whole chance to even do that.
Okay, well, yeah, I understand that technically, but I don't think emotionally he wanted to be somewhere where he didn't belong. It's always about being where you belong. To me, that's the thread of this film. That's the theme of this film. Where do I belong? Some people belong in prison.
He said he loved it. He said he thought it was brilliant.
And to me, that is a sympathetic angle on this guy. You mean you only belong behind bars where you can't?
Because
you can't fit anywhere?
Why would I feel sympathy for him?
Well, okay, you're getting so hung up on whether or not I felt sympathy for this guy. What I'm saying is that I felt some sort of connection with the guy on his emotional story.
Right.
But if you don't want me to say I felt sympathy for him again, I won't say it. But no, I did feel some sympathy for him.
No, I think a lot of that was the performance, too. I think that a lot of it was the directed performance by Refn Tahardy. There was a charm, there was a pluck to Hardy's performance of Bronson. The guy could not have been like this in real life.
All right, anybody else? Adam, what you got?
I want to point out that you know what's coming, don't you?
I do know what's coming.
How come each movie you pick out has to have a drag queen?
I don't know. I'm going to do a movie about Freud. As soon as one comes up,
I think you mentioned that at the Rosencrantz. You said, yeah, time to bring up some Freud.
Right.
James's next pick, Priscilla, Queen of the Dead.
Yeah. Okay, well, why don't we stop here, take a break for a second. Let's listen to a clip from 2008, Bronson, from writer-director Nicholas Winding Refn.
Now, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that prison is not bad. No! You see, I didn't see a cell, a cage, a box. To me, it was a hotel room. Don't get me wrong, for most people, prison is tough, but for me, prison was finally a place where I could sharpen my tools, hone my skills. It was an opportunity and a place where soon every native was going to know my name.
Okay, so there's a piece from Bronson, 2008. Hoodie, you have some things you want to talk about?
Not really. I just had some high points.
Some high points?
Literally two high points about the film that I'd like to reference, and I would feel sick if I didn't do it. And that's
the highest one. What is it?
Well, the appearance of Super Hands.
Nothing. Super Hands?
Nobody.
Super Hands?
His uncle was played by a guy named Super Hands.
Uncle Jack?
Was that his name?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Was that in the credits?
He played a character on Peep Show, which is an amazing show.
Oh, okay.
Super Hands.
Is that where the reference to Super Hands comes from, the Peep Show?
I would only assume so. And the second thing I wanted to say is they played my favorite New Order song.
Yes, I caught that.
What's the New Order song? I don't know.
It was when he was getting out of prison for the first time, and he met his parents at the car, and he went back to his childhood home.
Well, they also played the Pet Shop Boys, too.
I like
the
Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah, I think great.
Yeah. Good soundtrack, by the way. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, the soundtrack. It really was. And it was very, whoever the director is, Ruffian.
Ruffian.
Like I said earlier, that I didn't know that this was the same guy that did Drive or Valhalla Rising. I just didn't pay attention enough to it.
But the music was real similar.
No, but the whole thing was similar. It was very much him.
Especially with the candy glass on.
But even looking at the movie. Visually, looking at the movie, like you were talking about with the birthing scene, the red lights, that harks onto Only God Forgives.
Yeah, and, I haven't seen that film yet.
The last, well, it does. Trust me.
Yes, it does.
And then the soundtrack harks onto Drive, very much so.
Yeah.
So all through this movie, I was like, oh, this guy's trying to do what the dude did. The director in Drive did.
He's trying really hard to be himself. And that reminded me a lot of Drive 2 was the music in this. That's definitely his deal.
Yeah, go figure. I had no idea. But
80s synth is Refn's signature stuff.
80s, weird, but it's not 80s synth.
It really is. It's like Miami Vice, Michael Mann, 80s synth. I mean, that's what I thought.
I'd say 80s inspired synth.
That's his stamp, though. Yeah. This is my thing. This is what I do. This is the flavor I bring. you know, maybe it's just a huge, this huge influence on him somehow.
It works for
know.
Him. It really, and it worked in Drive like gangbusters.
Yeah, that
really
jacket. Did. Matter of fact, remember power jackets?
Why did this guy have a power jacket? Remember, you know what? If he had a power jacket, I'd probably be at a seven.
He had a power stash.
No, he had a very like 1920s. I'm a boxer stash. Which
he didn't have enough time to wear a power jacket.
He'd exactly. been too, he was too busy being off. Naked.
Let's talk about the weird stuff in this film because that's kind of weird. But you know, we talked a little bit earlier too about how he put his dukes up. Remember, like that's how he. He can't express anything emotionally except clenching the fist, those little things in the film like that. I noticed all kinds of stuff in this film.
You could take that to, you know, he tried the art thing, right? So he was the artist.
Right.
He gave a picture to the guy that was like, I'll give it to him. I'll look the at warden. It later. You could see on his face the disappointment that the guy didn't recognize him as trying to do something other than kill him, really.
Yeah.
Which right? he could have done.
So how did he deal with that? He took it out on his art teacher. So,
he took it out on him, all right. That was a strange
and
deal.
And he took it out on him in a very artistic way. I'll give it that.
Yeah, what did you think of that? That scene to me was so bizarre. I don't know really what it was trying to tell me about both those dudes, but
well, he painted the art teacher up as himself and then tied himself to the pillar in the middle of the room, painted himself black, hid behind a mask. Right, so
and got naked, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'll bet he was listening to the art teacher's instruction is to find that piece of yourself that it doesn't belong here.
Right,
and that's what he said when he finally put the finishing touches on that, put the glasses on, and put the hat on him. He's like, "There's a piece of myself," and that's when he called him in. He's like, "Okay, he's done."
Yeah, I love that.
Come
too.
On with it. You know, I'm done with this guy. I'm
and
not...
then, he, but then again, he fought everybody that came in.
Absolutely,
and submitted pretty easily in that last scene.
Yeah.
And the last scene you expect to be like the, you know, balls out to the death kind of thing, but it was like the most submissive scene.
But, you know, he didn't want to hurt that guy either. He tied him up. He painted his eyes. Whatever. I mean, he didn't really beat on the guy, hurt the guy, damaged the guy.
No.
And that says something about this is a different kind of prisoner. This is not a violent man at his heart, at his core.
No.
He's got maybe he's just an artist. He wanted to express himself so bad. There's an artist there. I mean, he's painting, he's drawing, he's tying up people, painting their faces. I mean, was that where his angst and all of his energy came from? Was this ability and this idea that he wanted to express himself through some kind of medium?
No, I think violence was his medium. I think
that's what I was getting at.
I think he was a fighter. I think he was a brawler. I think that's why he called them guys in. It's like, let's do it. This is the art. I want to see you guys come to me. I want to fight you.
Right.
You're the fighters of me. Let's do it.
He would have been great at UFC.
The key here is because, like I said earlier, he has since, you know, become an author of poetry books. He's an artist. So he found another medium. I don't know too much about him, but when was the last time you think he fought?
I have no idea.
Who knows?
4 years out of 30.
Yesterday.
I mean, it's...
I doubt it. To be honest with you, I doubt it. I think that he's kind of like turned a page on this thing. So,
what do you think about the scene? I want to ask you guys about the love interest in this film, too. What did you think of that whole thing?
Which one? The clip, the quick second that he married the girl with the baby? Or
the second one. The actual one that, you know, he went and robbed the...
where he sat on the couch and said, I love you. That's the important
one. I wanted to get to you guys, your opinions on that deal. How'd that play out for you? Did you find that to be believable or well-placed? Or did it work here? I mean, what did you get from this?
No. It didn't work for me.
You didn't?
No.
I thought that was kind of strange, too. I didn't really buy into that whole thing too much.
It felt kind of phony.
I like the fact that he went out and robbed a jewelry store, though, unabashedly.
Right. Which was an excuse for him to rob a jewelry store to go back into jail.
Right, I think so.
That's what I think it was, too, yeah.
I think he realized, I can't really be accepted out here. She's running away with this other dude. The only way for me to get back to where I can feel like me is to get back to prison. Yeah. You know, you hate those walls, and you learn to depend on those walls, as Brooke said.
Well, I bought it. I think that there was general affection for him, but I think it was such a foreign thing that there was no reference point at that point. There was only the savagery and violence of being the alpha male, and then the tenderness that is required of love and affection. I think it was completely foreign to him. That's why the whole scene where he's flexing his bicep and she's feeling it, and it's like it's so hard, and it's... Yeah.
He held up for a very long time.
Yeah, he doesn't know what to do. And so his thing is like, you should stay away from men bigger than you, because that's the only reference that he's like, somebody more powerful than you can hurt you.
But even then, do you remember when he held the place up? There was a little piece of him that's almost like, I really don't want to hurt this lady's feelings. I mean, I wouldn't say it so directly, but he still had something there like, I'm going to do this, but at the same time, I'm going to try to be
Nice,
maybe in a way. Everything he did was a duality of, I'm a nice guy who belongs in prison. That's basically what I got out of the guy, you know?
I think I just needed more of that, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I'm saying that I needed more depth in this character, and you're saying, you know, he was a nice guy, and I agree that when he went into the store, he was talking to a lady, and he was like, you know, please don't call them for another 15 minutes.
No, yeah. Wow. Well, he didn't say please. He's like,
well, you know what I mean. That's because he looked mean.
Doesn't he remind the guy who beat the heck out of somebody and then hold the door open for him on the way out? Big question is, how do you think the five of us would do in prison if we all had to go to prison?
I would be in solitary.
No, you would do well. I was thinking about this earlier.
I would put myself in solitary.
Adam, let me tell you about you in prison.
I would be the librarian.
Adam, librarian. I'm sorry to say, if you went to prison, it would be the longest night of your life. Andy. Hoodie, I think you do pretty well in prison. You know, you have that kind of intensity, snarkity.
Well, the key is to kill a guy with a spoon the first day.
Yeah.
That's the key. I mean, so, everybody knows that.
Right, so everybody knows that. So you kill him with something different than a spoon, like a lock.
You get a little piece of plywood out of the shop.
You go to the lunch line, and the guy in front of you, you just wail on.
Okay.
And then they're like, well, he may not have won the fight, but that dude is crazy.
You try that.
He got taters everywhere.
In case you don't know, we're talking about the 2008 film Bronson from writer-director Nicholas Winding Refn. And, we didn't talk about this earlier, but obviously it's our top three. Inspired somehow, some way by the film. I think this one's good. Top three movie prisoners. Easy, isn't it?
Easy.
Not that easy.
What I'm saying is it's an easy one to get to.
It's an easy pick.
We need to have top three movie prisoners. Right. And prison can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people, obviously. I think we're going to keep it pretty straightforward, though. Movie prisoners. And before we get to that, though, I think we're still on board. 31 years of solitary confinement.
31 years of solitary confinement.
For 2008 Bronson.
I was going to drop it down. But then you mentioned the birthing scene.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm actually going to go back and watch
The guy was being born right there, naked, dudes pulling him out of the
cell. Dude was being born, but did he have to say, oh, I was being born? You don't do that.
He didn't to me. I picked up on it before
he said it.
He
literally said, and you referenced it, that, oh, I was born in prison.
Yeah.
So you do it, you show, you don't tell, so...
You should give it an extra point just for the dance party scene.
Wait a second. Wait. Awesome. I want to talk about this. The limped arm guy, the one arm guy kind of dancing, shuffling like he had something wrong. That was a fantastic move. Scene.
I like the power dude.
The blue shirt.
That dude with the blue shirt, man.
Turtle man.
That was awesome.
I forgot about that scene, man.
My favorite guy was the tennis guy just swinging a racket. That was my favorite guy.
That's right, the swinging the racket
That was an awesome room they were in.
That was. Yeah. That I was watching. I was like, where is this prison? The Overlook Hotel?
It was an amazing.
That's all. I want to go to prison there.
I would do well in that prison because I can play tennis.
You're right at home.
And you can
next
dance.
To the poo guy?
No, I would stay away from poo guy. Right. But then when he's walking towards the door and the guard just comes out and kind of waves him away.
Yeah. Man, that scene.
He points to the chairs over there. Yeah, over there.
All right, I'll go over there.
God. Top three prisoners in film. Savage, let's do this, man. Number three, you go first. What is it?
Better be good.
My number three is a twofer. I am going to go with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor and Stir Crazy.
Nice choice.
Gene Wilder.
We bad. That was the worst joke, but I love it. That was amazing.
I have no idea what that joke is.
That's a Romancing the Stone reference.
Why would I all
see Gene Wilder?
Oh, okay, now I'm with you. It took a minute.
Yes.
So which one? Are you going to go with both of them? You going to say
it's
this
a twofer?
Like, it's a twofer. I think we give him a twofer.
My number three is a twofer.
One doesn't work without the other.
Right.
All
right. Stir Crazy.
Hoodie, what are you going to go with on your number three movie prisoners?
One of my favorite characters of all time only, Frank Drebin, Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Okay.
Is he a prisoner?
Man.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Frank Drebin. Nice, man. Nice. That's an obscure pick, but it works.
He was totally in prison.
Yeah. Nice beaver.
You've just blown Max's mind.
Just thinking of Frank Drebin makes me laugh.
Gone too soon, Max. What's your number three?
If James can have a twofer, then I'm having a twofer. Shears and Colonel Nicholson, River Kwai, Holden and Alec Guinness.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, both of them in that movie.
You gave them both.
I couldn't pick between either one of
really?
Them.
Really? You couldn't come down one side of the fence? Okay. All
right. Who's badder?
Oh, come on. You know who's better. We'll talk about that in a second. Adam, what's your number three?
Come on. I have a twofer as well.
Oh, come on. Geez, everybody has a twofer.
It's a three for twofer.
Tango and Cash.
That's been brought up too. Tango and Cash. Good answer.
Yeah.
Good answer. I may as well get this film out. Everybody's saying, you know, you're going to talk about Shawshank Redemption, but I'm going to go with my number three being Boggs, the rapist from Shawshank Redemption.
I'm going with Boggs. You went with just Boggs. One that you narrowed it down.
No, one. I'll tell you why. Because Boggs, Boggs liked prison. He worked there. He looked at his opportunity. He took prison full on. He's like, I'm going to make this situation work for me. I kind of respect that about Boggs, the rapist from Shawshank Redemption. Or I could have went with Charlize Theron from Monster.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, we need to have, matter of fact, we need to have some females in this limo. Charlize,
tell me about it.
Savage, what's your number two?
Chopper, Mark Chopper Reed.
What is this?
Chopper.
No idea.
Chopper? Chopper?
Why is this sound familiar? You probably
Chopper.
Know what this is.
I have not seen Chopper. I know the movie, but I've not seen it.
Mark Chopper Reed is the equivalent of Bronson in Australia.
Really?
Yeah. He's a...
He's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude. He's the celebrity. He is the celebrity Australian prisoner.
They need to make a film about him.
They have. It's called Chopper.
Called Chopper.
Oh, what am I talking about? What the heck am I talking about?
Starring Eric Bana. Eric Bana.
What the heck am I even talking about? Yeah, of course I made a film, but we're talking about a film. The heck's wrong with me? I am not
Chopper.
On my game.
If you haven't seen Chopper, watch it. The minute's on Netflix, I'll pick it. Number two, Hoodie. Number two.
Anywho.
Number two, what you got?
Hilt. Great Escape. Because this guy escaped.
Cooler.
Got some information. And then got captured on purpose to come back and help his boys out. You can't knock that. Great Escape.
No.
Which is why I picked Shears from Kwai. He got out, and what did he do? He went right back.
I like that you narrowed it down.
I think, okay, I'll go with Shears.
Shears. He didn't want to go back, though.
But Hilt's
that's
on
what
my
makes
list
McQueen
too.
So. And he yeah. drove the motorcycle over the fence
over
that
the
time.
Over the fence. And it was really Steve McQueen. So
number cool. two. Number
He's
two,
the coolest
Max.
Guy ever lived.
Number two.
Boom. Mick O'Brien from Bad Boys, Sean Penn, 1983.
Ooh. You know, that's actually
that
on Netflix. That's on Netflix, by the
83.
Way.
83. Yeah.
Bad Boys. I hadn't seen that in years and
he
years.
He was a bad dude.
He was a bad boy.
He was a bad boy. When he put those Coke cans in that pillowcase and beat that dude up for blowing up his radio.
I remember seeing
that
this.
That was awesome. Yeah,
I remember seeing this film as a young person thinking, I'm too young to be seeing this film. It's a good pick.
Too
deep.
I mean, too deep.
What about Adam the Bomb Rogers? What's his number two?
This one may be a little stretch.
Boy.
Uh-oh.
Old Boy?
Which one? What?
That was not a prison. That was a room.
It was a room? Okay.
Oh, then he was a prisoner, though, right?
He was in prison for 15 years.
The key word here is prison.
Okay, okay. Frankenstein from Death Race, the remake.
Thank you. That's a good one.
Because he got to drive cars in prison, and that's awesome.
And he wore a mask, and he wasn't really himself.
And it was Jason Statham.
And there was a cute girl next to him.
There's your tie-in right there. Statham was almost in this film.
Yeah,
Bronson.
All right.
Yeah.
And he had this thing on the back that he popped, and it was called the Tombstone. It was awesome.
That's fantastic.
You watched the movie.
All right.
Never seen the reboot.
My number two. We're going to get both these bases covered, Max. I'm going to go with Alec Guinness, Colonel Nichols from Bridge on the River Kwai. Why? Because, first of all, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's right here.
You can't keep Obi-Wan Kenobi down. This guy played the system.
He has the force.
He played prison.
All I'm saying is, if it was such a good movie, why are you giving it 2 and 3? Boom.
Well, we're talking about prisoners here.
We're talking about prisoners here, yeah.
There was a lot more to the movie than just being in
like
prison.
A bridge?
Like, if I had to go to...
In a river?
In River Kwai, if I had to go to prison with someone, like, this is my model, this is how I want to handle prison.
That is an amazing question.
Guinness, that's how
if
I'm
I had to go
prison.
To prison with someone, I'm going to... That's...
You want to go with Colonel Nicholson?
Yeah, he's going to keep me safe, man. He's going to find a way to make this work.
I'd go with Steve McQueen because he'd escape, figure it out, and come back.
Well, you
back
could
and
go
me.
With Shears and go and escape, too.
Or you could go with Boggs from
Shawshank.
Or we
could go to Savage and figure out what number one is.
What's your number one, Savage?
Well, I'm going to forsake the obvious number one, which I'm hoping somebody gets the obvious number one. But I'm going to go with Edmond Dantès from The Count of Monte Cristo.
Wow, that is actually a good one. That's not what I had. James and I talked earlier, and we were not telling each other our answers. We were looking at each other like, yeah, I know the number one. I know it, too.
What is it for you?
Cool Hand Luke.
Good
it
choice.
Is Cool Hand Luke.
That's not mine. That's not what I was thinking.
That should be up there for me. Yeah.
No, it is the number one. There is no better prisoner than one.
Yeah, there is.
There's one other.
I hope Adam's got it.
I'm not going for it.
Okay.
I'm not going for the obvious number one.
Okay. What is it?
No, let Adam have it.
I'm going Frank Morris, Escape from Alcatraz.
There you go.
Good choice.
Clint Eastwood. The guy escaped from Alcatraz.
He escaped from Alcatraz.
I mean, come on.
Right? It was awesome.
What about you, Adam? What's your number one?
I got to go with the greatest ever, Hannibal.
There you go.
Wow.
There
you think is. That's, man, that, you know, how'd I even forget that? How do you, you know, I put that? I put this out on Twitter. I had everything but that. That's so strange.
That's not the obvious one I was looking for.
All right. Well, my number one, obvious. I'm on my number one now, aren't I?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could turn around. I can't remember what I'm on.
You get to pick the obvious.
Yeah, the obvious one is, obvious. Man, let's go with Edmond Dantès, Count of Monte Cristo. But there's three of them. You're going to take Caviezel with 2001. You're going to do Richard Chamberlain, 75.
Caviezel.
Or Robert Durant, 1934.
Durant.
Mm-hmm. Durant. No, it's not really Durant. Maybe it is.
Let's see. I think Richard Chamberlain could beat both of those guys up, so I'm going with Richard Chamberlain.
I've only seen the two.
Caviezel
I've only
played
seen two.
Jesus, so you're out.
Yeah.
Nope. Richard Chamberlain would whip his butt.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Richard Chamberlain? Yeah. Come on.
I did like the last one, though, the 2002 one. Guy
Love
Pierce.
That one.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
Right, the obvious one I was looking for was Andy in Red from Shawshank.
The obvious one is Ernest Goes to Jail.
Well, I had that on my list. I marked it off.
How about Harold and Kumar Go to Guantanamo Bay?
Oh, what about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
How about Charleston Heston in Planet of the Apes?
Charleston Heston.
How about Spartacus? Anyone? Spartacus?
I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.
Exactly. Actually, Jack Nicholson in Cuckoo's Nest, that was a hospital. It was a
right, but in the movie, he actually went to a hospital, so it kind of applies.
As always, we put this out on Twitter. See what kind of feedback we get. You want to hear what we got?
Absolutely.
Sure. You'll like this. Film Dispenser at Film Dispenser. He says, I'm going for a non-Shawshank McQueen. And, how about McQueen and Hoffman and Papillon?
Papillon. That's Papillon.
Exactly
Papillon.
Right.
That was on my list as well, Papillon.
I was going to see if you were going to catch me on
Papillon?
That, since we talked about it all day.
Yeah. Papillon escaped like 9 times. He jumped off a Devil's Island on a bag of coconuts.
Yeah, I love that.
Isn't Laura Papillon in Orange is the New Black in the prison?
You know that Michael O'Brien at Michael O'Brien Film says Robert De Niro in The Deer Hunter, Eric Bana in Chopper.
Chopper.
I like this guy. Look at that. I've never heard of him.
That's not prison.
Chuck at Smarky Jerkface.
That's what I always call him, too. Smarky Jerkface.
Chuck at Smarky Jerkface says, how about everyone in the movie Victory?
Victoire. Victoire. Yeah.
Victoire.
That's the one with Pele. Yeah.
At Pele at Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, Stallone
and
Pele.
And,
the soccer
Pele.
Player?
Was Michael Caine in that?
Yep.
Michael Caine. Yeah.
Yeah, no,
Michael
Max Caine von Sydow.
Sebastian Nebel. Cool Hand Luke. And
Max von Sydow was the German.
He also said Un Profete. You know what that is?
A Prophet. That was awesome.
Right.
That was on my list.
Sounds like a foreign film.
That it was remade, I do believe.
No, don't watch the remake. It's A Prophet, if you look up the...
Kyle remake. Hall at Marvelous Zombie 616 said, Dieter Dangler in Rescue Dawn?
Oh, yeah.
Rescue Dawn, yeah. That was a good movie.
The POWs and Deer Hunter and the original Old Boy. Tim Robbins and Shawshank Redemption. Sarah Lania said, SKLZ 6196. Oh. Says, yeah, obvious. Says James Allen in I Am Fugitive from a Chain Gang and Velma Kelly from Chicago. There's a little female.
Velma.
Oh, I like Velma.
There you go.
I like that movie. Yeah. I like the remake Chicago.
What about
I like her moves.
Yeah. Would George Clooney and Oh Brother Art Thou, would they be prisoners?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Be. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Of course
we didn't get any Chain Gang love on this thing.
We didn't get Django because he got unchained.
We didn't get Life. We didn't get Life starring Martin Lawrence.
Oh, I would never.
There's just a couple more.
Oh,
of these
that's
things.
Right. We were looking for best prisoners.
Amateur cinephile says Stalag 19. I'm sorry, Stalag 17.
Yeah. Stalag, that was on my list.
Bridge on the River Kwai, The Great Escape, Birdman of Alcatraz, and Bronson. Check that out. I was waiting for someone to get on that. First time watchers at First Time Watchers says Toy Story 3, Rear Window, The Rock, Inner Space, and Office Space.
I just got the ultimate one, 1984.
There you go.
They're all prisoners.
They are prison. Oh, that's my one plus.
I'm a prisoner to my own heart.
That's the best answer I've ever had.
No, you're not.
All right, guys, there you go.
Did nobody hear 1984? I literally
no,
just said
no, 1984.
I love it. You just blew my mind.
Everybody was in prison. Yeah.
That's what I'm
total
saying.
Total utopia.
All right, there you go. Boom.
Dystopia. Dystopia. All right, guys, that's Boom. It, man. That is episode 28, I do believe. 2008 Bronson, writer director, somewhere in the 2000s. Nicholas Winding Refn. So that's it, guys. Next week we have a big reveal, right?
Yeah, we do.
Let's get into it.
Who is it?
Well, it's going to be my choice.
Oh,
you know we have a bit of a. He's like the Oracle. We go to Blue, our buddy Blue, right? He suggested something. He says, "Why don't you guys do something from the early 90s?" I thought, man, that inspires me to go right to this movie. Glengarry Glen Ross, man.
Oh, boy.
Love is a battlefield, and so is hardcore real estate sales.
Wow.
And you want to talk about dialogue, you won't run out of it here. I don't think there's a second Mamet. In this film where someone's not talking. The great David Mamet play
Mamet.
Brought to screen. And, you know, it's funny because I've seen this film. I haven't seen it in a long, long time. Last time I seen this was before I went into sales, which was for 5 years. I've seen some bad things. I've been in some bad sales meetings. So I'm kind of curious to see if it holds up for me or how I feel after that. So we'll find out. That's next week. Yeah, and until then, you guys take care. Steaks. You
steak
guys.
Steak knives.
I almost said steak knives. I am not here to
take care of steak knives.
You guys take steak knives.
I have fallen off
then
the
you're
mountain.
Fired.
I have fallen down the edge of the mountain today. Yeah, you guys stay safe. Take care. We'll see you next week on the queue when we queue up the film. Glengarry Glen Ross. See you then. Thanks a lot.